next order.
Real people, real radio. Wherever you are, make it TFR. Truth Frequency Radio.
Hello, 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 ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the broadcast. My name's JD. We are live right now. Today is the fourth day. No, it is the second day of the fourth month. That makes it April the 2nd, 2015. This is, of course, the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast. Really appreciate all of you guys hanging out in the chat room this morning. It's so nice to join the show and already have a full crowd in the chat room. Just absolutely love talking to you guys from around the world. And somebody is talking about bubblegum and pork bones. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's going on in the chat room. And Eric's already off speaking German this morning. So I don't know what's happening, ladies and gentlemen. I gotta say though, really, glad to be a part of it all. Regardless of what it is that's going on, I'm happy to be here sharing, these moments with you guys. This is really the best part of my day. Okay. It's gonna be a big show today. Hope you guys are ready for this one. Very, very excited to be bringing a guest on that I'm not sure a lot of you guys have heard of before. His name is Servando Gonzalez. He is somebody who I think you guys are going to be exceptionally interested in. He has written many, many books about the downfall of America. I'm not going to tell you a whole lot about him because I'm going to let him tell you a little bit more about himself when he comes onto the program. But I absolutely tell you guys straight up front, you're not going to want to miss this conversation. This gentleman, Servando, is absolutely amazing. He was just cracking me up on the phone last night. The amount of energy this guy has is pretty incredible. So anyway, that's what's going to happen in the second hour. Do definitely stick around for that. It will be worth your while. I absolutely promise you. The man has written, as I said, a lot of great books about psychological warfare against the United States, about Council on Foreign Relations. He is a Cuban national as well. So we'll talk a little bit today about what is going on in Cuba and what it was like to escape Cuba when he was very young. Just absolutely astounding stories today we're going to hear about, and I'm really looking forward to that. Also, Xavier Hayes is going to be joining us tomorrow. So for those of you guys who tuned in for the program last time and we had the bad connection issues, I've handwritten several letters to the NSA asking them to allow us to go ahead and have this conversation tomorrow. So hopefully they were well received and we should make some headway with Xavier tomorrow. So anyway, that'll round out the week here for the Red Pill Reports, but not quite because I will be joining the Woo Crew once again on Friday night. I have no idea how I got roped into that, but I'm really excited to be a part of it because it is a really fun way to spend a Friday evening, basically just going over all kinds of ridiculous ideas. We really let the conspiratorial juices flow in terms of that show. So I'm definitely looking forward to that Friday night and being a part of that. Did you guys happen to catch Kev Baker's show yesterday? He had one of my very favorite authors on, James Perloff, and they were talking about the sinking of the Lusitania. Just absolutely amazing. First and foremost, you gotta give major credit to, James Perloff. The man has got a brain that's just unbelievable to me. His, the ability to just call up information the way he does is unbelievable. And then, you also have to give a lot of credit to Marty and Kev because that was just such a great interview that they did. Those guys are great at, pulling information out of guests. So I highly recommend you guys go back, check out that download, because again, James Perloff, such an amazing individual, and really, for those of us, for those of us who understand really what's going on in the world, it's very, very important to look back at history to try and figure out where we're going from here, and nobody is better qualified to do that, in my opinion, than James Perloff. And again, we're kind of in knee-deep in the false flag territory right now. So if we can understand that the people who were in charge back then are still in charge now and that the agenda is just kind of continuing on, well, it makes it a little easier to identify who exactly are the adversaries, you know what I mean? And that's, again, one of the names of the game around here, trying to figure out exactly who it is that's responsible for all this stuff. And I'll tell you, that was a great show yesterday. If you guys didn't get a chance to hear it, I would definitely check that out. So, we do have a lot of news to get to today. I will be jumping into that one in just 1 second. I want to, just put the word out right now that, people in the chat room, and I'm not really speaking to anybody in the chat room right now, but we need to stay polite in there. You know, the chat room is about, interacting with other listeners, interacting with hosts on shows. It's not about trying to drag people's name down. It's not about airing personal laundry and things like that. So just kind of putting it out there right now, that I do have in my hand, in my little hand here, the Banhammer, and I will be absolutely privileged to bring said Banhammer out and Banhammer your butt out of the chat room so you provide, me some reason to do so. So just putting that out there. If you want to be in the chat room, please be polite. Please be polite to the hosts and the other listeners. Everybody is here to learn, and that's the name of the game for the chat room. So anyway, that's my warning. I'm putting that out there right now. Mind your P's and Q's in the chat room. And of course, not speaking really to anybody in there right now. I'm sure there are people in there who know who I'm speaking about and what I'm speaking of. But anyway, we will move on because, as I said, lots of news. Please go to redpillreports.com. Check out the show section at the top of the page. You'll be able to find out a lot about Servando Gonzalez, and you'll also be able to see – no, not you, Tavi. You'll also be able to see all the news that we aggregate from around the world. And I got to be honest, it was a pretty big news cycle yesterday. So we're going to go flying around the globe here right up front, and then we'll hop into the United States, and we have got a little bit of science and tech stuff we have to talk about today as well. So biggest story right now, obviously, in the news cycle is this plane crash that happened in the French Alps. There was a story that came out yesterday, and it actually broke right when Kevin was going on to the air, and I was wondering if he was going to cover it. Because I'm not sure. It seems like no matter what article I cover, by the time the afternoon rolls around and Kevin and Marty have gotten a hold of it, they've ironed out all the details and figured out where I'm wrong. So hopefully maybe this afternoon you guys will get some more insight onto this particular story that's broken now. But there has been purportedly now a video filmed during the final seconds inside the cabin of the doomed German Wings airliner minutes before it crashed. And people in the European media are insisting that it is in fact genuine. The French authorities initially firmly denied the existence of this clip, which allegedly relays, and again, in just a few seconds, the scenes of chaos and passengers screaming, "My God," in several languages. But they are now calling on anyone in possession of such a film to hand it over to investigators. So the French magazine Paris Match and the German Daily Bild said the authenticity of the video is unquestionable and that it had been retrieved from the wreckage of last Tuesday's crash by a source close to the inquiry. The magazine's journalists added that they had seen the video, and they said that "we have checked and rechecked its authenticity." Again, this is a Paris Match spokesperson speaking with the Telegraph as of yesterday. So the phone apparently had not survived the crash, but the memory card on which the video was stored apparently did survive. So again, Paris Match wrote yesterday that its provinces leave no room for doubt. So the footage appears to have been taken from the back of the plane, but no individuals could be identified. According to Paris Match, the scene is so chaotic that one cannot distinguish anyone, but the screams of the passengers reveal that they were perfectly conscious about what was about to befall them. One can hear "My God" in several languages. One can also hear a metallic blow at least three times, suggesting that the pilot tried to break down the cockpit door with a heavy object. And they actually go on to talk about that heavy object in here, and they're backtracking away from it being an axe, saying that now it was more likely that it was a fire extinguisher or something that he pulled out of the galley, which does make way more sense to me, because obviously there's not just an axe hanging out in the cabin. But if the pilot did try and break back in to the cockpit with a fire extinguisher or some sort of heavy object, that would make more sense to me. So Bryce Robin, who is the Marseille prosecutor, he confirmed that several mobile phones had been found at the crash site, but none yet have been examined to see if any useful information could be retrieved from them. All he said, he actually insisted, were near the crash site when with the CEOs of Lufthansa and Germanwings visited on Wednesday morning to pay their respects. So again, Mr. Robin said the phones were all in very poor condition due to the impact of the plane on the mountainside. And Lufthansa, said it was aware of the reports of the footage, but questioned whether a mobile phone could have withstood the impact. And again, it's if you guys, I'm sure a lot of you guys out there have smartphones and understand how small and durable the micro SD cards are now. Now, imagine that I would think that a micro SD card could probably get through a plane crash as long as it wasn't engulfed in flames or something like that. So. Anyway, Paris Match said the authenticity of the film was bolstered by a fresh transcript of the cockpit voice recorder, which investigators recounted to the magazine. So they kind of go into a lot of detail in terms of what the newest transcript that has come out, and it is it's more than I'm going to read on the air right now because it's very long. But the video, if there is a video. Again, the Paris Match journalist who wrote the article on the video and claims to have seen it says he has not been able to pan it over to the French investigators because he's only viewed the video. It wasn't actually his video. So, the French investigators now calling on anybody out there that has knowledge of a video being taken inside the cabin there as that plane went down. They're trying to get that into their hands so they can actually validate its authenticity. But as of right now, it does seem to validate the official story going on, you know, in terms of the voice recorder. One of the other things that came out in this article I found was really interesting was, you know, we had talked about the fact that the cockpit was being manned by the co-pilot at the time and that the co-pilot's breathing had not changed, right? He was very calm and steady. In this particular article, they mentioned the detail that the co-pilot actually had pulled the oxygen mask down. So he was actually on oxygen at the time. And what do we all know from Fight Club? What happens when you take oxygen in heavy-duty doses? Well, you get high, don't you? You get calm, you get relaxed. That's the whole point of the oxygen on the planes, really. That's the thing they don't want to talk about. But essentially, if this co-pilot had put this oxygen mask on and was breathing, you know, oxygen in the cockpit there, he would have been really calm. He probably wouldn't have cared about flying into a mountain, and his voice and breathing would have probably stayed normal. So it's interesting now to me to see more and more details starting to come out about this crash. And if we do get an opportunity, I don't really necessarily want to watch this video, but I am interested in seeing whether or not it is authentic and whether or not the French investigators can get their hands on it. So that's the latest in that particular plane crash story. We'll keep you up to date. I'm sure Kevin and Marty will probably be all over that this evening. Let's jump over to Nigeria. As I said, we're going to take kind of a goofy trip around the globe today, but we were talking earlier this weekend about the potential Marines being stationed in Nigeria in apprehension of potential violence coming out after this election took place. Well, Buhari won the election. General Muhammadu Buhari, he is now the new president of Nigeria, and he came out after his victory just yesterday and has singled out Boko Haram as the largest problem facing the country. So again, General Buhari, who was a former military ruler, now describes himself as a reformed Democrat. He did win the election there in Nigeria, and now he is saying that Boko Haram, number one threat in the country there. So that's what's going on in Nigeria. I promised I'd give you guys an update on that. Let's jump over into the Middle East right now. The Islamic State fighters, as of yesterday, seized a vast camp for Palestinian refugees on the outskirts of Damascus from other insurgents on Wednesday in a bid to capture a major foothold close to President Bashar al-Assad's seat of power. In a separate advance, rebel groups that have received backing from Assad's Arab Western foes captured a border crossing with Jordan, the first time Damascus has lost has lost it since the start of the conflict, according to a source on both sides. The gains by groups at opposite ends of the insurgent spectrum show that the pressures facing Assad, who has sought to shore up his control over western Syria, including the border zone with Jordan and Israel, the last notable foothold in the mainstream rebels, who have largely been eclipsed by jihadists. They have come just days after an alliance of Islamist groups captured the northern city of Idlib, from the government and the Nusra Front, al-Qaeda's wing in Syria, the ones that we are supporting. These are the moderate Muslims that we are supporting, al-Nusra Front. And one of the other groups involved announced on Wednesday that the city would be run according to Sharia law. So until Wednesday, the assault on the Yarmouk refugee camp, the group did not have a major presence in the area around the capital, where insurgents have basically been loyal to other groups. The Yarmouk refugee camp, which was home to 500,000 Palestinians before the conflict began in 2011, has been held by anti-Assad insurgents and besieged government troops since the early days of the war. It is a few kilometers from the heart of Damascus, which is still firmly in government control, mirroring the way Islamic State has grown elsewhere in Syria. Its fighters have seized control of areas of the camp from other insurgents, helped by rebels from the rival Al-Qaeda-linked Nusra Front, who switched sides, a political activist has said, in the area. So there you go. That's what's going on in Damascus right now, a large Palestinian refugee camp being taken over by the Islamic State, and then new calls for Sharia law throughout the city there. So, you know, I was talking to my buddy Robert this morning, and we were just saying, I wonder if we're ever going to be successful in Syria. And I think he and I both thought they're probably never going to give that territory up. And I, you know, there's a reason that all of these Mid-Eastern countries have all of this goodies that they've got, all the military equipment, because that's all the stuff that other people have left there trying to take over. That's really where they get all this stuff. I mean, for thousands and thousands of years. So anyway, I don't think any resolution is going to come out of Syria anytime soon. It just seems to be more turmoil in the Middle East. Speaking of turmoil in the Middle East, I don't know. This to me seems like pretty good news. Palestine is set soon now to have its day in court after securing a long-awaited membership at The Hague. Plagued by constant setbacks to a peace deal with Israel, the ICC newcomer wants to see Tel Aviv on the stand for alleged war crimes in Gaza. So this April 1st ascension to the International Criminal Court is the most substantial step to date in Palestine's international legal campaign to seek justice for Israel's Operation Protective Edge last summer, in which thousands of civilians were killed. Shortly before the summer assaults, Israel insisted that Hamas was firing rockets into its territory and answered with a massive bombardment, complete with a ground phase that saw destruction on a scale not seen for decades. After 50 days, a ceasefire was called upon. So speaking to Russia Today, ICC spokesman Fadi El-Abdallah said that Palestine now gets all the same rights as well as obligations that member countries have. He also added that the ICC jurisdiction of Palestine has already started because Palestine had made a declaration accepting the jurisdiction of ICC with retroactive effect starting from the 13th of June, 2014. And basis declaration on the ICC prosecutor has already started a preliminary examination to decide whether or not legal criteria are met to open an investigation. So the ICC membership has been years in the making. It comes after Palestine gained UN observer status, followed by an increased number of European countries recognizing them as an independent state or at least considering it. And Israel's operation tipped the balance in Palestine's favor this last summer. But will the opportunity at the ICC mean that Benjamin Netanyahu's government will actually be tried, or will the case result in an added strain to the relationship between the two players here? In March, Palestinian leaders showed disapproval for Israel's failure to comply with a number of bilateral agreements and voted to suspend all forms of security coordination with Tel Aviv, a step that many fear will escalate tensions further. It also should be pointed out here that the militant group Hamas is also liable for prosecution by the ICC, which will also carry out a full investigation into the summer events, pending the results of the current ongoing probe. And so the ICC prosecutor said in January, a preliminary examination is not an investigation, but a process of examining the information available in order to reach a fully informed determination on whether or not there is a reasonable basis to proceed with a full investigation. So joining the ICC obviously opens up possibilities. The Palestinian leadership can not only take Israelis to task for their summer campaign, they can also challenge the Jewish state continuing settlement building beyond the Green Line as a war crime, and Israel's settlement building has been condemned by the international community, including the UN. I want to jump into this other story here because I thought this was amazing news coming out of Israel yesterday. Talk about a 180 here. Israel has now approved an unprecedented building of thousands of homes in East Jerusalem in the face of massive opposition from right-wing groups. So now a total of 2,200 new homes were approved by the Jerusalem municipality in Arab al-Sharawa, which is a district of some other place I can't pronounce, one of Jerusalem's poorest neighborhoods. So essentially, this is the largest construction project for Palestinian families in Jerusalem since 1967. This is coming out of Haaretz report as of yesterday. It's obviously being ridiculously opposed by right-wing politicians and nationalist groups there. But as well as the new 2,200 Palestinian homes that they're going to build, honestly, yeah, wood, I'm telling you. 300 were also given retroactive consent, having been built without permission already. So the statement from the office of the mayor there claimed that the approval was part of a wider plan to improve Arab neighborhoods in Jerusalem, which it said have grown and developed in the last several decades with no master plan or outline. So the lack of planning led to the widespread phenomenon of illegal building, which is estimated to include about 20,000 buildings to date. And the architect for the project told Haaretz that opposition to the project had already stalled development by more than 4 years. So this is important. He says, I had doubts about accepting this project and he didn't want to become a pawn for politicians, but the residents gave me a mandate and the public understood that it could act collectively in order to improve its own situation. So while this approval has been granted, each individual family will now have to get building permits in a process that could take several years. So older residents there came, and it was very moving to see the hope in their eyes, blah, blah, blah. Okay. What I find to be really important about this is essentially this was a political move done by the architect of this entire program, because he was concerned that once Netanyahu gets his feet off the ground here and gets this new coalition government, that the concessions to the Palestinians are going to go away immediately. So he thought it was very important to try and get this approval pushed through for these 2,200 plus the 300 retroactive approvals for actual Palestinian families to build their homes. And he's trying to do it basically before Netanyahu can come and poo-poo the whole parade. So it does go to show that there is hope. There really is hope, because there are people there in Israel who aren't just hell-bent on destroying other people's homes, that actually want to do something about it and also recognize the threat that their own government poses to the other people and also to the peace in the region. So it's very interesting to see that going on. Did we already cover Yemen? I'm not sure if I already covered Yemen or not. I think I did. But Yemen's ousted officials have requested now a ground invasion to bolster a Saudi-led air offensive against the country's Houthi rebels. Meanwhile, neighboring Iraq has made calls for diplomacy, saying the military campaign, quote-unquote, is a strategic mistake. So Saudi authorities say they have gathered troops along the border in Yemen in preparation for any possible ground offensive. And Reuters reported earlier this week, adding that no exact time to send troops in has yet been stipulated. Pakistan, which has previously been supported by Riyadh, has deployed troops to Saudi Arabia to provide extra regional security, also said it will be sending troops to support Saudi Arabia in the context of its current Yemeni conflict. And despite the airstrikes delivered by Saudi air forces and the Gulf allies, the Houthis are still continuing their offensive against the dwindling loyalists of President Mansour Hadi. Hadi was, of course, the president ousted by rebels, and he fled to Saudi Arabia requesting military intervention in the Arab states. Long story short, we're basically getting ready to go to war in Yemen, and they're looking at a ground war there. Meanwhile, Iran's deputy foreign minister is saying this is a strategic mistake, and he's calling on dialogue to help solve the Yemeni crisis. Iran and Saudi Arabia, he says, can cooperate to solve the Yemeni crisis. He also says that he recommends all parties in Yemen return to calm and dialogue, which is obviously what we're all hoping for here at Red Pill Reports, because these proxy wars, they're just getting a little old, aren't they? I'm sick of them, to be perfectly honest. Okay, also jumping down into South America now, Venezuela ambassador to the United Nations, Rafael Ramirez, he announced that the government of Venezuela will now file a complaint with the UN against the government of the United States for the executive order declaring the situation in Venezuela as a threat to U.S. national security. He goes on to say, we are going to hold a long session of denunciation against the aggression our country is being subjected to. We will explain our reasons and we will submit a request along with other countries of the world to President Obama to repeal the decree against Venezuela. And in an interview with the multi-state news channel Telesur, Ramirez added that the government there in Venezuela will be supported by regional organizations, ALBA, ONASUR, CELAC, places like that, other groups like that. So again, filing a complaint with the United Nations. And then another article coming out talking about Central and South America. It seems like at the next summit of the Americas in Panama, they're going to be throwing around the idea of getting all of the bases, all of the American bases out of Central and South America, which to me seems like a pretty good start. And to be perfectly honest, I cannot imagine why all of these countries that are rich in resources just absolutely kowtow to the United States and all of the banking interests, because it seems like at this point, 2015, we should be at the point where everybody has enough internet access that we could see just how awful everything actually is. And I mean, if we need to get all these world leaders, James Perloff's book, Truth is a Lonely Warrior, I think, because that would really clarify to them exactly what's going on. And then maybe also get them the Economic Hitman book from James Perkins or John Perkins. That would be another great one to talk about. There was a huge incident that happened in the West End of London yesterday. Thousands of people were evacuated and West End shows were actually canceled as the smoke engulfed central London from an underground fire. So 2,000 workers fled offices in central London after thick black smoke was seen billowing up from a manhole cover. Onlookers reported struggling to breathe and chaos in areas as evacuees waited on the street and traffic built up. The West End shows, including The Lion King and Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, have been canceled. And the blaze today was caused supposedly by a faulty electrical cables underground. And it was a very, very, very large scene. Crazy, crazy pictures. If you go to redpillreports.com and check out the show section, you'll be able to see this article. But thick, thick, thick black smoke. There's a couple pictures of just absolute intense heat. I've never seen a manhole on fire like that before. I mean, that looks like absolutely an opening to the gates of hell. But anyway, that happened in central London or on the west side of London yesterday, just keeping you guys in the loop. And there's also been a large fire breakout on an oil platform belonging to Mexico State's Pemex petroleum giant in the Gulf of Mexico. It led to the evacuation yesterday of about 300 workers. And according to the company, at least four people have died and about 16 of them were injured. So that was a huge deal going on in the Gulf of Mexico yesterday. Again, a lot of impressive pictures from that. Apparently not a lot of spillage, but, it remains to be seen exactly how honest they're being with us, in terms of that. So, okay, that's pretty much everything from around the globe. We do have some stuff to get to in the national news right now, but we are kind of hopping up on a break. So lots of investigations going on in Congress and the legislative side, but there's also some bad news in terms of some investigations we'd like to see happen that aren't going to happen, apparently. We've also got some super big news coming out of California today that we've got to talk about, and as well as some economic stuff. I do want to also make sure we talk about this new executive order that President Barack Obama signed yesterday regarding cybersecurity. We are really on a slippery slope now, ladies and gentlemen. So we'll go to this 3-minute break. We'll come back. We'll bounce around the national news here real quick, talk about some economic stuff, and then I'll get into this whole new executive order on cybersecurity. It's not going to be good, but it is a brave new world, ladies and gentlemen. It is a brave new world. I'm excited to be a part of it all. Happy to have you guys in the chat room this morning. Man, full crowd in there. Keep you guys up to date on what's going on in just about 3 more minutes. Keep it right here, guys. We'll be right back.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
A sudden change in the wind. The day grows dark as ominous clouds move in and lightning begins to carve arcs in the sky. And you realize you are not prepared.
I'm telling you to take cover.
The number of intense storms is increasing exponentially in the U.S. Tornadoes, hurricanes, flooding, and droughts are happening with greater magnitude and frequency. If you are choosing to rely on the government to save you,
and no one's coming to help them,
you could be dead wrong. The first step towards self-reliance in the face of disaster is a visit to MyPatriotSupply.com. There you'll find the absolute absolute best prices on storable foods, non-GMO seeds, emergency water filtration devices, and so much more. All orders over $49 qualify for free shipping in the lower 48. Visit us online or call 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. And speak to one of our preparedness advisors today. Remember, before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com. Did you know there are 3 million edible food plants on Earth, and none have the nutritional value of the hemp plant? HempUSA.org offers you hemp protein powder. It does not contain chemicals or THC, is non-GMO, and is 100% gluten-free. Hemp protein powder burns fat, builds muscle, contains 53% protein, and feeds the body the nutrients it needs. Call 888-910-4367 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org. Wouldn't it be nice to have one product that replaces more than 10, saving you space, time, and money? HempUSA.org has a complete full-spectrum vitamin mineral detox formulation called Micro Plant Powder Gold. Micro Plant Powder Gold contains 101 vitamins, minerals, probiotics, and iodine, has a 100-year shelf life, and is a perfect addition to any storage shelter. Make Micro Plant Powder Gold your choice. Call 888-910-4367 or visit HempUSA.org today.
Within Radio with Tom Barnes and Tommy Woodgate. Saturdays on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the radio show. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys for hanging with me through that 3-minute break. I really appreciate you guys being here with me in the morning because it's, I'd just be here talking to myself. I wouldn't have such a great crowd in the chat room already. And I try to kind of stay up with what you guys are talking about, but it gets a little silly in there sometimes. So we're just going to jump back into the news. Want to give you guys the heads up again. Servando Gonzalez will be joining us here in about a half an hour. You guys are not going to want to miss this gentleman. I promise you that. You guys will absolutely love this conversation that we're getting ready to have. So definitely stick around for that. Okay. Jumping back into the national news, talking about the United States here. Republican senators right now are going to be investigating the potential executive amnesty retaliation against DHS personnel. What are we talking about? Remember the fact that Barack Obama a couple of weeks ago supposedly put out this executive order giving a new direction to the Department of Homeland Security, and under their umbrella, obviously, is the Border Patrol, giving them new directives saying that they're not going to be deporting a certain amount of people, right? And then we had the backlash from the federal judge who put an injunction against that. But at the same time, all of that, you know, ridiculousness was going on, the back and forth between the federal judges and the state of California, or the state of Texas, really. Barack Obama came out. We had this, I think I talked about this last week. Barack Obama came out and he basically said in a news interview that these edicts that he had put out regarding the treatment of undocumented minors coming into the country, that was the policy. That was essentially what it was. He doesn't care about the injunction, and that any particular officers who are not acquiescing to his request were essentially going to be punished. There would be consequences. I'm sure you guys remember that quote. It was a couple of weeks ago. But now, a Senate Judiciary Subcommittee on Immigration and the National Interest revealed that it is investigating any of these potential retaliations against DHS employees who have allegedly been punished for not complying with the administrative's enforcement priorities. So again, just to bring it home here, according to the senators, and there's a lot of them, but specifically the Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Chuck Grassley is calling on Johnson, Jay Johnson, the head of the DHS, to provide information related to the discipline of DHS employees over the last 6 years, including the authority upon which your department will relay to penalize department personnel for their failure to comply with an unlawful and unconstitutional order. So again, the senators are basically outlining the position that this order that was given by the president is unlawful and unconstitutional, and also would like now any evidence that exists of punishment of any of the employees of DHS who have said, I'm not going to go along with this edict from the president because it is, in fact, unlawful and unconstitutional. Any instances in which people like that were punished? Well, these senators would like to find out a little bit more about that. So you can see how they're going to start digging in on this one. And I do like where that is going. Where I don't like where we're going is the fact that the Justice Department came out yesterday and they have decided they are not going to be pursuing contempt of Congress charges against Lois Lerner for refusing to testify about her role at the IRS in the targeting of conservative groups. So again, the department announced this decision earlier this week in a letter to House Speaker John Boehner, whose Republican-controlled chamber made the request to prosecute after holding Lerner in contempt for refusing to answer questions at subcommittee hearings. So Boehner said, once again, the Obama administration has tried to sweep IRS targeting of taxpayers for their political beliefs under the rug. It's getting difficult to walk around here, isn't it, with all this crap piling up underneath the rugs around here? I swear. But anyway, let's see. Ron Machen Jr., who is the U.S. attorney for the District of Columbia, said in a 7-page letter that federal prosecutors concluded that Lerner did not waive her privilege because she made only general claims of innocence during her opening statement. Thus, the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution would provide Ms. Lerner with an absolute defense should she be prosecuted for her refusal to testify, wrote Machen, who was appointed to the U.S. attorney post by President Barack Obama and the left for private practice on Wednesday. So again, one day after sending this letter, this guy retires. Anyway, he also said he will not refer the case to a grand jury or take any other actions to prosecute. So man, let's file this in the it's a great job if you can get it category, I suppose. But Lois Lerner coming out, she did, I think, Trey Gowdy pointed out, she made 17 individual assertions of her innocence before then claiming the Fifth Amendment, which is obviously not typically the way that's done. You would, once you say, I haven't broken any laws, well, that implies a lot of things. That implies that you already know what the laws are and that you were, not acting in opposition to them. Which is apparently not the case in terms of Lois Lerner. But hey, we'll never know because she's not going to be prosecuted. So there you go. Good job if you can get it. Okay, we got to talk about California right now. This is an absolutely groundbreaking, monumental move in California from Governor Jerry Brown yesterday. He announced yesterday the first mandatory water restrictions in California's history. Brown was on hand yesterday as state officials took stock of historically abysmal levels of snowpack in the Sierra Nevadas amid the state's grinding drought. It was the first time that the governor attended the measuring event, which has taken place at Lake Tahoe since 1942. Brown ordered the California Water Resource Control Board to implement mandatory restrictions to reduce water usage by 25%, and the water savings are expected to amount to 1.5 million acre-feet of water over the next 9 months. So, what is it specifically that he is mandating here? So he wants to require golf courses, cemeteries, and other large landscape spaces to reduce water consumption. He'd like to replace 50 million square feet of lawn statewide with drought-tolerant landscape as part of a partnership with local governments. I would suggest permaculture gardens to feed your people, but hey, that's just me. He also wants to create a statewide rebate program to replace old appliances with more water and energy-efficient ones, so you can see now who's lobbying for this particular rule change. He also wants to require new homes to have water-efficient drip irrigation if developers want to use potable water for landscape. He'd like to ban the watering of ornamental grass on public street medians. Calls on water agencies. Here's the big one. He wants to call on water agencies to implement new pricing models that discourage excessive water use. That's the big one here. That's where it's going to hit your pocketbooks if you're out living in California right now. Jimmy, LA, talking to you, brother. So again, calling on water agencies to implement new pricing models that discourage excessive water use. What is excessive water use, ladies and gentlemen? Who knows, and who's going to be stipulating those new rules? He also wants to require agricultural areas to report more water usage information so the state can better regulate and find waste and improper activities. He'd also like to create a mechanism to enforce requirements that water districts report usage numbers to the state. So I do see the word enforcement in there also, which is another key word as far as I'm concerned. But Brown did say drastic changes were necessary because it is unclear how long the drought will last. Again, this is a absolutely controlled situation. If we wanted it to rain in California, we absolutely could make it rain in California, but we're not choosing to do that. So again, electronic readings on Wednesday at about 100 stations across the Sierra Nevada showed that the water content of the snow was only at about 5% of the state average for April 1st, and the date on which snowpack is normally considered at its peak. So official manual readings will be announced Wednesday afternoon. Again, that did come out to be about 5% of the normal snowpack. So again, mandatory water restrictions for the first time in California's history being announced yesterday. And again, that part that really bothers me is this whole call on water agencies to implement new pricing models. New pricing models. I wonder how much more water is going to cost you guys in California going forward here. I don't know. Got to keep an eye on that, though. Good morning, Kev. Kev, TFR royalty, popping into the chat room this morning. Everybody say hi to him. Okie dokie, moving on here. Also, Kev, while you're in here, really good show with Perloff yesterday, man. That was fantastic. I've already told everybody to go download it. Great, great stuff. Looking forward to more good stuff from you guys, as usual. Jumping back into the news here. Okay, New Jersey Senator Bob Menendez was indicted now on corruption charges. Where is all this coming from? Where is all this coming from? Who did Bob Menendez piss off, ladies and gentlemen, is the question I always have. So again, New Jersey Democratic Senator Bob Menendez was indicted yesterday on corruption charges. He is accused of using his office to improperly benefit a political donor. Now, the improper benefit of political donors is how the game is played in Washington, ladies and gentlemen. So the fact that this guy is essentially being indicted now for doing his job as everybody else there does their job, is a little surprising. So again, why is Menendez now being singled out? Again, long-term senator. He's been around for a very long time. Guy knows how the game is played, now being indicted. So again, a federal indictment of the very powerful senator on 14 counts, including conspiracy to commit bribery and wire fraud. So a Newark grand jury has been investigating Menendez for official actions he took on behalf of his friend, Dr. Solomon Melgen. Melgen is a Florida ophthalmologist, was also indicted on Wednesday. But this indictment is a blow to Menendez. Here's the key sentences here. Who is the top Democrat on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee? So again, we're talking about a powerful dude here, ladies and gentlemen, the top Democrat on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee until recently the chairman of that at a very critical time. He has been the leading skeptic of Obama administration's Cuba and Iran policies. And this indictment comes as the U.S. and other world powers are struggling to strike this nuclear deal with Iran. So is it his opposition to this, Obama administration's agenda with Cuba and Iran that have led to his indictment, which is essentially, again, he's being indicted for doing the same thing. If you guys have seen House of Cards, I mean, you know how this game is played. I mean, that's bottom line. So this whole idea that lobbyists would be getting benefits from particular people in politics is not – it's like par for the course, you know. So this guy is essentially being indicted for playing a proper game of golf here. And so I don't know. And it really doesn't even look like the charges are that much. We're talking about like $60,000 that he supposedly he essentially got some free flights from his doctor friend who he's been friends with for like 20 years and didn't pay for it. And the doctor paid for it. And he apparently gave some privileges back to the doctor for said airline flights. But we're not talking about a whole lot of money. And again, I just always find it interesting that when you've got these guys who are aligned against Barack Obama coming under sudden indictments, it just seems like it's important to pay attention to. Something else important to pay attention to while we're on the subject, in the war of full of failures, talking about Afghanistan here, the U.S. counter-narcotics mission in Afghanistan obviously stands out as a pretty high watermark in this whole war full of failures. The opiate production has climbed steadily over the last years and is now set to reach record high levels this year. But there's actually a pretty clear winner in this whole anti-drug effort, and it is not the Afghan people. It is, in fact, the infamous mercenary company formerly known as Blackwater. Remember, wholly owned now by Monsanto. Right. But anyway, statistics released on Tuesday revealed that the rebranded private security firm, known since 2011 as Academy, reaped over $500 million from the futile Defense Department push to eradicate Afghan narcotics. Some 32% of the $1.8 billion in contracting money the Pentagon has devoted to the job since 2002. So the company, again, Academy, what you call them, what was the other one? Blackwater, XI, I think might have been one of their names for a little while, is by far the biggest beneficiary of the counter-narcotics agenda in Afghanistan. Its closest competition is the defense giant Northrop Grumman, who claimed a paltry $250 million profit last year. So that's $250 million versus $1.8 billion with a B, as in, boy, that is a lot of money to spend on heroin. Far from eradicating the deep-rooted opiate trade, U.S. counter-narcotics efforts have proven pretty much useless, according to a recent series of official inquiries. Other aspects of the billions that the U.S. has poured into Afghanistan over the last 13 years of war have also contributed to the opium boom. In December, the United Nations reported that 60% growth in Afghan land used for opium poppy cultivation since 2011, which is up 209,000 hectares. And the estimated $3 billion value of Afghan heroin and morphine represents some 15% of the Afghan GDP. Tell me again why we had to go to war in Afghanistan. Was it a $3 billion a year opium? Or was it the $1 trillion in lithium that we found? I mean, that Russia found back in the 80s. I mean, that we found back in 2011. Could it have been the crazy amount of resources in the area? I just don't know. Those are kind of conspiratorial thoughts, but you just never know. I'll tell you, $1.8 billion for trafficking heroin if you're a private contractor. That's pretty good money. That's pretty good money. Okay, I'm going to pop through a couple of real quick stories here in the United States just because I found these to be important. Chicago, you guys have a problem. Robbers are appearing now to copy Mexican drug cartel tactics. They are using roadblocks to block off areas and then violently rob people. So this happened actually last week in a suburb of Chicago. These group of people in Chicago taking a page apparently out of the Gulf Cartel or Los Zetas manual for setting up roadblocks in order to carry out violent robberies. So if you're in Chicago, this is just something to be aware of that's going on. I don't know. I don't know how to give you guys advice. If you pull into it, just pack weapons. I guess you can't do that in Chicago either. Man, move away from Chicago. There's my advice. There's my advice. That's the best thing I can tell you. Get the hell out of Chicago. Also, we don't have a whole lot of great stories to cover on stuff like this, but this is a pretty good one. Earlier this month, an enraged man in a crowded Philadelphia barbershop pulled out a gun and opened fire on everyone inside, apparently in a fairly indiscriminate manner, catching the attention of an armed concealed carry permit holder who was standing outside of the building. The concealed carrier, who is now being hailed as a hero, entered the barbershop and fatally shot the mass shooter before the shooter could actually claim any of the victims' lives. So again, going back to our little Chicago story, if you can't carry a weapon where you live, you are in danger, ladies and gentlemen, and you need to move. Maybe not, doesn't apply to you kids in the UK, but I'll tell you what, if you're in the United States, especially in a place like Chicago, holy cow, I would be armed to the teeth. Let's get into some investment moves here real quick. Get over, see what's going on in the Dow. Dow is currently up 48 points right now, 17.746. The S&P up just a touch as well at 2,058. Dollar index has dropped just a touch today. We're at 97.85. The euro rising against the dollar about 1% today. We are at 108.70. Let's see, silver right now at $16.63 big pennies, and gold just a touch below 1,200, which to me is still pretty clear a buy at this point, but 11.97 will get you an ounce of gold right now. Let's check out what oil is doing. 49.14, just down about 2% again today, so still staying pretty flat around that $50 mark, and Bitcoin sitting at 244.15. I still think that the Bitcoin thing is going to take off if Greece decides to leave the euro and go into that. Truth be told, coming through in the clutch, BDI down right now, 8 points today, sitting at 588. Thank you, Truth. Appreciate you coming through in the clutch right now. Moving into some international economic news, the BRICS leadership has now been passed on to Russia, and the $100 billion sub-BRICS Development Bank is now the main priority. Yes, we're going to be talking about another development bank that we haven't actually talked about yet before. So as Russia assumes the chairmanship of the BRICS Business Council, the launch of the new development bank for its members will begin as an alternative to the U.S.-denominated U.S. I'm sorry, International Monetary Fund. Sergei Katyrin, who is the president of the Russian Chamber of Commerce, he took over the chairmanship of the Business Council of BRICS, which is the economic association, of course, made up of Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. He took this over on Wednesday, just yesterday. The seventh summit of BRICS will be held in the Russian city of Ufa in July. And in July of 2014, BRICS members gathered for the sixth summit in Brazil, where they signed an agreement to forge ahead with the $100 billion new development bank, which will also possess a reserve currency pool worth over $100 billion. So judging by the proportion of the planet that now falls under the BRICS fold, the economic alliance seems destined to be a powerful force on the globe. BRICS represents, again, 42% of the world's population and about 20% of the world's economy based on GDP. Total trade between the countries stands at about $6.14 trillion. Again, that comes down to 17% of the world's total transactions going on through the BRICS banks right now. According to Russian experts, economic turnover within the BRICS is in the last 5 years has doubled, and despite the crisis, any serious depreciation is not expected. They expect the growth rate inside of the BRICS organizations to be between 5 and 10% this year. But the creation of this new development bank, which is the NDB, will not only be a major project on the agenda during Russia's one-year BRICS presidency, but Katrin says there are some 40 projects set for consideration by the five-member group, the most important at present being in the field of infrastructure. So again, more moving away from the dollar. BRICS being taken over by Russia now for the next short term, and the new development bank being well-funded. So I'm telling you, we're moving away. Wow. Okay, we've only got 7 minutes left, and I'm going to totally drop the ball. I do have to get over into the science and tech stuff because of the cybersecurity thing. But I also want to point out that the new revolution is going to start in Iceland, or may intensely, or may have, as a matter of fact, already started there. A lawmaker from the ruling Progress Party issued a report yesterday suggesting, listen to the radical idea coming out of Iceland right now. They actually are suggesting taking the power to create money away from the commercial banks and giving it back to the central bank and then ultimately giving it back to parliament. Wow, what a crazy, radical, novel idea, taking the ability to coin money away from private bankers and putting it back in the hands of elected officials. Unbelievable. I can't even imagine. I doubt the revolution will be televised, ladies and gentlemen. But again, who'd have thought that it was going to start in Iceland? Pretty much all of us, I think, at this point. So anyway, I got to jump over. We'll come back to this economic stuff here real quick because I do have to talk about this executive order on cybersecurity. This is crazy. So this executive order signed by President Barack Obama gave yesterday the United States government the go-ahead to sanction suspected cyber criminals and financial and travel restrictions amid a wave of quote-unquote high-profile attacks. Citing the surge of assaults against the computer networks in the United States in recent months, President Barack Obama said yesterday that he has declared, quote-unquote, a national emergency, accordingly authorized the U.S. Treasury Department to sanction suspected hackers operating abroad in an effort to discourage future cyber assaults. So we've been talking about the potential false flag cyber event. It doesn't even look like they're going to need it because they're already talking now about this executive order that was signed yesterday. So again, on the heels of the attacks suffered by the Sony Pictures Entertainment target and seemingly ever-expanding list of other victims as of late, the Obama administration has a newest effort now intended to amplify the government's ability to go after hackers and deter future online assaults that may otherwise have crippling effects. Coupled with the Department of Justice's recent promise to ramp up its ability to counter foreign cyber criminals through the creation of a new threat integration center, the latest memo from the White House reveals yet another option in the administration's growing toolkit with regards to its ability to tackle malicious actors who operate online. The language included in this week's directive is already raising concerns, however, and could be broad enough to let the federal government or give the federal government unmatched new powers in the digital realm. And that's exactly what is going on here. This increasing prevalence and severity of malicious cyber-enabled activities originating overseas is posing an unusual, extraordinary threat to America's national security, foreign policy, and economy, reads part of the six-page executive order. Quote unquote, blocking the property of certain persons engaging in significant malicious cyber-enabled activities published by the White House on Wednesday. That was the name of this executive order, blocking the property of certain persons engaging in specific, significant, malicious, cyber-enabled activities. These guys really know how to title something, don't they? But again, this provides the administration with a targeted tool for countering the most significant threats to be waged against the nation's critical infrastructure. They go on to say this executive order supports the administration's broader strategy by adding a new authority to combat the most serious malicious cybercrimes that we face. This is the president again speaking in a statement. Under the directive, the Department of Treasury, Justice, and State may consult with one another and come up with a list of persons believed to be responsible for or complicit in cyber attacks waged against the United States networks determined by the administration to be detrimental enough to warrant a reaction, be it by restrictions of the financial or travel variety. Specifically, the order says an individual can be sanctioned by the government if the government believes them to be involved in a cyber attack that harms, compromises, or disrupts a computer network integral to critical U.S. infrastructure. Also subject to sanctions, however, are any persons purported to have electronically pilfered or otherwise intercepted trade secrets or financial information with the intent of achieving monetary gain. You guys starting to see the slippery slope here now? So officially, critical infrastructure components include vital systems and assets that could cause a debilitating impact on security, national economic security, national public health, or safety, and covers the communication, commercial, and transportation sectors, among others, according to the Department of Homeland Security. Concerns have already given way now regarding the possible use of this directive to censor foreign news outlets, depending on how the source material has been obtained. Marcy Wheeler, an independent national security reporter, formerly with The Intercept, wrote on her blog Wednesday that there is now a possibility that the administration might use this executive order to target foreign entities that disclose secret documents if they happen to be acquired in a method that does not cut the administration's mustard, right? According to the Treasury, malicious cyber-enabled activities, as described by the president's order, include deliberate activities accomplished through unauthorized access to a computer system, included remote access, circumventing one or more protective measures, including bypassing a firewall or comprising the security of hardware or software in the supply line. So here's the questions. Does WikiLeaks' publication of secret TPP negotiations qualify? Does The Guardian's publication of contractors' involvement in the NSA hacking qualify, right? Indeed, the Treasury has said this week that an order is tailored to address cyber-enabled activities that are reasonably likely to result in or have materially contributed to a significant threat to national security, foreign policy, or economic health or financial stability of the United States. So as the language indicates, it is intended to counter the most significant cyber threats that we face, whether they target our critical infrastructure, our companies, our citizens, or our economic health or financial stability. Previously, though, lawmakers have blamed WikiLeaks, the infamous secret spilling organization, for being a danger to national security, especially after it published the State Department and Pentagon documents taken by the U.S. Army intelligence analyst Chelsea Manning and successfully lobbied PayPal, Visa, and MasterCard to stop processing donations to the anti-secrecy group. So last December, attorneys for the credit card processor used WikiLeaks, filed a lawsuit over that particular blockade. So again, we're on a very slippery slope. I've run out of time to get through the rest of this article right now, but, this is a bad deal. This is a really bad deal. This is, gonna open up the door to targeting individuals who are trying to disclose information in a whistleblower style. I mean, this is big time stuff here, ladies and gentlemen. I don't even know what to say about that. We gotta go to a 3-minute break. Keep it right here. When we come back, Servando Gonzalez will be joining us, and I really think you guys are gonna enjoy this. Appreciate you guys hanging out in the chat room. We'll be back in 3 minutes, guys. We'll see you in just a second.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR. Did you know that the blue lotus flower was used by the ancient Egyptians as an aphrodisiac to experience feelings of euphoria and ecstasy? And ecstasy. And ecstasy. Did you know that Thai kratom was used by the Buddhist monks to produce a relaxing and dreamlike state? Did you know San Pedro cactus was used by the Native Americans to quest for visions and heal the body? Bouncing Bear Botanicals is your number one supplier of rare and sacred plants and a proud sponsor of Truth Frequency Radio. By clicking on the banner at truthfrequencyradio.com, you can learn more about a vast selection of entheogens, including Amanita muscaria, also known as the sacred mushroom. So click on the banner at truthfrequencyradio.com, and you'll also get up to $40 off your next order.
Judith Baker was once a promising science student who dreamed of finding a cure for cancer. This exposé is an account of how she strayed from a path of mainstream scholarship to a life of espionage in New Orleans with Lee Harvey Oswald. In her narrative, she offers extensive documentation on how she came to be a cancer expert and what led to her involvement in the development of a biological weapon that Oswald was to smuggle into Cuba to eliminate Fidel Castro. Details on what she knew of Kennedy's impending assassination and her belief that Oswald was a deep cover intelligence agent who was framed for an assassination he was actually trying to prevent are also revealed. Me and Lee by Judith Baker. Special JFK 50th Anniversary Signed Limited Edition. $30 including shipping. Limited number of these available. Order your copy today at federaljack.com/store.
Real people, real radio.
Initiating the Truth Frequency.
This is Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys so much for hanging out with us through that 3-minute break. I'm very, very excited. We're entering the second hour of the broadcast today, which is always the guest hour. And I gotta be honest, man, the two guys, Robert and Fletch, behind the scenes at Red Pill, they do such a great job of bringing the most amazing guests to the program. And today is no exception, ladies and gentlemen. I'm very, very excited to be welcoming to the stage today, Servando Gonzalez. And if you don't know Servando Gonzalez, would just put his link to his website in the chat room, but you can also find a link to servandogonzalez.org if you go to redpillreports.com and get into the show section. But I highly recommend you guys go check out his website. Again, servandogonzalez.org, servandogonzalez.org. You'll be able to find out all of his information about him, all of his articles that he has written, as well as be able to get all of his fantastically well-written books, ladies and gentlemen. But for those of you guys who don't know Servando, he is a Cuban-born American writer. He's a historian and an intelligence analyst. He's also written several books, essays, and articles on Latin American history, intelligence, espionage, and semiotics. He's also the author of The Secret Fidel Castro, Deconstructing the Symbol, and The Nuclear Deception, Nikita Khrushchev, and the Cuban Missile Crisis. He's also written I Dare Call It Treason, The Council on Foreign Relations and the Betrayal of America. His latest book is Psychological Warfare and the New World Order. He's also hosted documentaries called Treason in America, which was the Council of Foreign Relations and the Partners in Treason. Also the CFR-CIA Castro Connection, which is one of the things I'm definitely interested in speaking with him about today. But without further ado, Servando Gonzalez, thank you very much for joining us on the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast today, sir.
Thank you, Jade, for having me on your program. Yes, I've written a lot of books and there are also some of them in Spanish that are not that one you mentioned. But the first book, the first big book that I wrote in English, The Secret Field Castle, was published in 2001.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, there was a problem. This is the product of more than 20 years of research.
Right.
And then, as you told, I'm a historian by training. I have degrees in history from the University of Havana.
Uh-huh.
But half through the, working in this book, I realized that current history, in which there is a large content of intelligence and espionage, to write about this, the tools of research and analysis of the historian don't work.
Right.
So I began trying to find a different approach, and then I said, well, I need to learn about intelligence and espionage. And then I began reading and reading and reading, and then I became myself an intelligence analyst.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no way, there's not taught in any university, and the CIA or the KGB are not going to tell you how to do it. But then I kept doing this, and then I wrote in 1995 a long article, tongue in cheek,
right?
Using my what I learned about intelligence and espionage, and that's 1995. And I call Fidel Castro Super Mole.
A Super Mole.
Super Mole.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very funny. And based on what is called the mirror image theory, that, well, there is no difference between different intelligence and espionage agencies, the Mossad, the MI6, the KGB, and the CIA, they work very similar.
Right.
And then, tongue-in-cheek, the theory was this. As Americans had a James Jesus Angleton, the CIA's chief of counterintelligence, who was convinced that the KGB had infiltrated a mole at the highest levels of the CIA, well, the Soviets should have also their KGBs, and I call him Ivanovich Angletonovich, chief of the KGB's second directorate, counterintelligence, who firmly believed that Fidel Castro was a super mole, an enemy agent the CIA had infiltrated into the communist camp.
Wow, okay.
Okay, it's very funny. It's very funny. It's still in the internet, 1995. And then, but at the time, it was just an educated joke, okay?
Right.
Everything I use, but I have no facts, just hints and an idea. And then in 2001, I published the book. It's a big book, almost, let me see, I have it, almost 500 pages, close to 1,000 scholarly footnotes.
Mm-hmm.
And I call the book The Secret Fidel Castro, Deconstructing the Symbol. Now, using my new approach, this book is not a biography of Fidel Castro. It's not a history of the Cuban Revolution. It's what is called a CPP, or Comprehensive Personality Profile.
Okay.
That intelligence agencies around the world have of political leaders, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then the model I used to write this book was based on William Dankler's study of Adolf Hitler. William Dankler was a scholar, a university professor who worked for the OSS, and then he was in charge of doing this. This report on Hitler, and many years later was declassified, and published under the title The Mind of Adolf Hitler. Amazing book. And then this is how I work in this book. Then a year later, I wrote a big book, also a brick of almost 500 pages, close to 1,000 footnotes, about the Cuban Missile Crisis. And I titled the book, The Nuclear Deception, Nikita Khrushchev and the Cuban Missile Crisis. By the way, I have nothing about the book, but this, as a personal note, I was in the Cuban Army. I was an officer in the Cuban Army in 1962 during the Cuban Missile Crisis. So I have a few views from inside the monster.
I'd love to talk about that if you wouldn't mind. I'm sure people are really, really fascinated by your background.
Yeah, but I don't want to spend all the time this. It's interesting because my approach is unique. I found that most of what has been written about the Cuban Missile Crisis is just trash. It's just propaganda. I, in my book, I say, I reached the conclusion first that there were no nuclear missiles in Cuba.
Not one.
How this began? Well, according to the known story, U-2, reconnaissance plane flying over Cuba discover missile bases of nuclear missile bases with a nuclear capability that the Soviets were installing in Cuban soil.
Okay.
And then in October, I think it was Gino Brugioni, one a photo interpreter analyst for the CIA, was brought to the Kennedy, and he showed the ultimate proof and was the photos taken by the U-2s that show that there were the photographs, that is the proof, that the Russians had nuclear missiles in Cuba. Now, this is like a spy novel, this book.
Right.
Well, the point is this. This is all it's nothing have to do with that. The U-2 photographs plus the high level U-2 photographs plus the high resolution low level photographs taken by Voodoo planes are now in the internet in high resolution. Anybody can go and check the photos.
Uh-huh.
Well, the point is that there are no missiles in the photos. No, not a single one. Well, you can see the small SAMs that is a surface to air nuclear missile that the one who shot the U-2 in the east part of Cuba.
Okay.
But the big ones, the nuclear capable missiles, are not there.
Hmm.
Oh, what you see in the photographs are long wood crates that the CIA say the missiles were inside.
Oh, okay.
Hey, and you see some concrete bunkers that the CIA knew the nuclear warheads were there.
Hmm.
And also you see the photos taken by American planes when the Russians decide to retire the missiles. But what you see on the decks of the ships were, wooden boxes.
And that's it. That's the only evidence that we had to suggest that they were.
Yeah, you know my guess what the nuclear boxes contain?
What's that?
Havana cigars for Nikita Khrushchev. Well, my guess is as good as the CIA. I don't have a proof that they contain Havana cigars, and the CIA had no proof that they contain the nuclear missile. By the way, very strange. There was a blockade, a Navy blockade, but Kennedy didn't order the inside inspection of the, just stopping the Soviet vessels and board the ships and inspected the crates. No, sir. There are many other hints that everything was a hoax And the one hint is that, you know, nuclear warheads emit radiation, gamma radiation. There is nothing, except in my book, talking about radiation, the presence of radiation in Cuba from the nuclear warheads. Okay? And it's interesting because at the time, even at the time, in 1962, the United States has in the Dardanelles Strait a sophisticated machinery, equipment, to detect nuclear radiation from Soviet submarines crossing by.
So we would have known then without have had actual real evidence of, radiation leaking. Okay.
Absolutely. And there are many other things that are not technical but are political. The thing is that according to Nikita Khrushchev in his memoirs, he was in April 1962 in Bulgaria, and then he saw across the Black Sea, say, oh, the Americans there in Turkey, they have nuclear missiles pointing to Russia. Then I'm gonna give them a taste of their own medicine. I'm gonna give nuclear missiles to Castro pointing to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a problem with that. That, according to Nikita Khrushchev, he was in April. Because in April 1962, Fidel Castro expelled the Soviet ambassador, Sergei Kudryavtsev, from Havana.
Really? Okay.
Oh, yeah. He expelled. He put him in a Soviet plane back to Moscow without even a chance to change his underwear. And a group of, Mr. Kudryavtsev, who was the Soviet ambassador, was a high-level KGB officer. He had been expelled from Canada a few years before for stealing the nuclear secrets. And then why Castro expelled the Soviet ambassador for Cuba and some of his KGB thugs? Because Kudryavtsev was conspiring to give a coup d'etat and overthrow Fidel Castro.
Wow.
Wow. Kudryavtsev went to Russia and he was not sent by Nikita Khrushchev to the gulags in Siberia. Just a few months later, he was appointed ambassador, Russian Soviet ambassador to the UNESCO in Paris.
Oh, okay. Wow.
So that means that he was not acting on his own.
Right.
He was following orders from Nikita Khrushchev. So you have to be crazy. Khrushchev, he was crazy. He was to give Castro nuclear missiles the same month that Castro had expelled a Soviet ambassador from Cuba because Khrushchev was trying to overthrow Castro.
Right.
Okay. And there are many, many, many other things that point that everything was a hoax. Of course, keep in mind that that keeping hot the Cold War was very profitable. Okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
And that was a hoax. So, but this is an amazing book. An amazing book, and this is it reads like a spy novel.
Well, then, I gotta say, that's one book that I haven't got yet, ladies and gentlemen, so I'm gonna have to get that one, cause I am super interested in the connection between the Castro and the CIA and JFK and all of the stuff that was going on in South Miami, you know, throughout this. We basically were funding a proxy war inside of, Cuba, were we not?
Hey, I didn't get you the repeat.
Weren't we, waging a proxy war through Miami to support rebels in Cuba during, how does the CIA and the JFK and how does all this mess kind of get untangled?
Well, let me tell you.
Okay.
There is a saying in intelligence and espionage that things seldom are what they seem.
Right.
Okay. And this applies to the relation of the CIA with Castro in Cuba. We go to that point right away. Now, in so look at the same 2002. In 2007, I hosted a DVD called created by my friend Dan Dillman of Exol Media Group in San Leandro, California, mm-hmm. that we call Treason in America, the Council on Foreign Relations. Mm-hmm. So at that time, I already discovered that there was an invisible government of the United States.
Yes.
Okay? And then in 2010, I published Psychological Warfare and the New World Order, the secret war against the American people. Where this is, everything is there. I'm providing and again, it's not conspiracy theory, it's conspiracy, period. Right. It's an scholarly book, but very readable. Again, this book is say, 400 pages and more than 1,000 scholarly footnotes. So everything I say is very well documented.
Yes, sir.
And in this book is something that, I began researching. I discovered new information about Castro. The longest chapter in this book is about the Bogotazo.
About that? I'm
sorry?
Have
you heard about the Bogotazo before?
No, I've never heard of that.
Oh, never heard. Of course, never heard. Well, everybody knows that in 1953, the CIA was created in July 26, 1947, when President Truman signed the National Security Act that created the National Security Council and the Central Intelligence Agency.
Okay.
Okay? Now, as the name implies, the Central Intelligence Agency was just, that was the idea, a clearinghouse for information, for intelligence. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That getting from the other intelligence, military intelligence, Navy intelligence, State Department intelligence, and so on, FBI intelligence, clearinghouse. But okay. just a few months after it was created secretly, the National Security Council passed a directive authorizing the CIA to get into covert operations.
Wow.
Okay?
Okay.
And this is an aberration. It's like having the same person who do the accounting to do the audits.
That's right. The hen guarding the fen house, the fox guarding the hen house, so to speak.
Yeah. And they created that. And then again, in 1953, the first, that's what you read in books about the CIA. 1953, the CIA overthrew the government of democratically elected premier Mossadegh in Iran. 1954, they overthrew the government, democratically elected Guatemalan president Jacobo Arbenz.
Mm-hmm.
But almost no book about the CIA mentions or just give a paragraph about what I discovered was the first large secret warfare operation carried out by the CIA that is called the Bogotazo. On April 28, 1948, there was some riots in Bogota, Colombia.
Okay.
And the riot was the cause of the riot was the assassination of Colombian populist leader Jorge Eliezer Gaitan by a crazy guy, you know, it's those crazy guys that appear and then kill and then was a riot, destroyed half of the city. Just by chance, the riot happened when there was a very important meeting, international meeting, in Bogota, Colombia.
Mm, okay.
Presided by U.S. Secretary of State George Marshall.
Mm, the plot thickens.
The plot thickens. And that meeting was for the creation of the Organization of American States. There was a U.S. CIA-controlled organization.
Wow.
Okay? Mm-hmm. Now, by another coincidence, John Fidel Castro, 21 years old, student of the University of Havana, was there. Okay?
Yeah.
And when Gaitan was killed, just by chance, he was half a block away.
Right.
Okay? And immediately, this is not funny, that's true, that Marshall said, well, he blamed the communists. And the guy in the State Department said, he discovered this. He said, what? He looked through the window and they said, the communists did it. Okay? He blamed the communists. And, but I began researching again. This is the longest chapter in the book, because as they say, extraordinary claims need extraordinary proof. And the plot thickens, because a few years after I published my book on the secret Fidel Castro, where I have the suspicion that Castro had been working for the CIA, I discovered that a Cuban, by the way, he was one of the investors of the Bayer's Peak. He was in jail in Cuba for several years. His name is Ramon Conti. He published he self-published a book in Spanish called The Secret Crimes of Fidel Castro, where he says that in early 1948 he was a law agent for the working for the CIA in Havana, and he was sent on a mission with another CIA guy, also Cuban, to be on the looking for problems in front of a mansion on one of the rich neighborhoods in Havana. The mansion was the house of Mario Lasso. Mario Lasso was a American educated lawyer who had he ran most of the legal business for the American embassy in Havana.
Okay.
And according to Conte, and this meeting, Castro arrived with his friend, Rafael Del Pino Siero. And in the meeting was, of course, Mario Lasso. But there was a few CIA guys, like, Del Pino's aunt, that she was a CIA officer in Miami, and several other CIA and OSS related people.
Wow.
And according to Conte, this is the place where they recruited Castro and sent on a mission. According to Conte, a few years later, the CIA agent who recruited Castro, his name was Salvatierra, had a meeting with Castro and Del Pino, and Castro assumed the code name Alex.
Ouch.
And he was sent as an agent provocateur to Bogota to plant false information pointing that he threw some leaflets in a meeting there, and they discovered some Marxist literature in his room. You know, they found in the 9/11, the only thing that survived was
the passport.
The passport.
The magic passport.
Yeah, and yeah. they found a Quran in one of the
That's right.
In Boston, one. Yeah, you know, it's the same technique. The
it
same
is. Thing. Hey, Servando, we've got to go to this quick 3-minute break. We'll hop back into this Havana thing, because this is a really interesting story to me. I think people really are under the impression that there's less going on down there than meets the eye. So I want to get back into this. As soon as we get back from this 3-minute break, ladies and gentlemen, Servando Gonzalez is our guest. Keep it right here, guys.
Joe Joseph here for Truth Frequency Radio. According to allgov.com, since 9/11, a total of 238 Americans have died from a terrorist attack. That's 24 a year, making your chance of dying 1 in 625,000. Conversely, you have a 1 in 1,000 chance of becoming a victim of police brutality. Yet we spend trillions of dollars on the war on terror while militarizing an abusive police force. At TruthFrequencyRadio.com, we have a team of the very best personalities in independent media. A team that's dedicated to bringing you reliable and rock-solid news and information so you can arm yourself with knowledge and join the fight against worldwide oppression and tyranny. Truth Frequency Radio. News without the hate, hype, and fear.
Doctors don't want you to know about iodine because it allows the body to heal itself quickly and permanently. Iodine Now is a complete powder formulation that will load iodine into the body with vitamin C for the best possible absorption. Iodine Now, available by the case and for protection from radiation, fluoride, chlorine, and bromine, including all heavy metals. We believe that this is the main element that humans need more than any other at this time. This formulation is infused with our bioactive aerobic rare earth nutrient powder that has a powerful negative charge that attracts positive toxins. Why not buy one product that does the job of 20 and saves you space, time, and money, has a storage life of 100 years, all for about $18 a month. Call 888-910-4367 or visit hempusa.org. Call 888-910-4367. 910-4367. Bringing back the universal medicine for mankind. Iodine Now. Only at HempUSA.org.
We all know the importance of having storable foods. But what about when the food runs out? What then? For real food independence, you need a supply of non-hybrid seeds. Introducing the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. The Survival Seed Vault is sealed for freshness and includes 20 varieties of easy-to-grow non-hybrid seeds for only $37.95. For less than $40, you've got real food independence. And the Survival Seed Vault includes detailed planting and seed-saving instructions. Imagine the barter power you'll have when the food supply does collapse. Right now, save $9 instantly when you buy three or more Survival Seed Vaults from MyPatriotSupply.com. Same day shipping on all orders, plus free shipping on orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness products at MyPatriotSupply.com. That's MyPatriotSupply.com.
Take the red pill, you stay in Wonderland, and I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Down the rabbit hole with Popeye, Tuesday through Friday,
Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys very much for sticking with us through that 3-minute break and for all of you guys hanging out in the chat room. It's always so nice to see you guys in there. Our very special guest today is Servando Gonzalez. You can find his website by looking for servandogonzalez.org. You can also follow the link from redpillreports.com, which will land you right on his homepage where you'll be able to pick up all of his books. We've talked about today quite a few different things. We're talking about right now the CFR, the CIA, Castro, and kind of the collusion that was taking place in Havana before we even really knew what was a Havana at this point, really, right, Servando? So before the break, Servando, we were kind of talking about that meeting that took place in 1948 with some key elements of the CIA being in attendance. Do you want to just pick that story up right there, sir?
Well, but I'm not going to tell you any more about that because I'm not going to tell you the end of the film. I'm going to destroy the.
Fair enough. Spoiler alert. We don't want to go down
now,
that road.
Now, let me ask you a question.
Okay.
Do you think that history is boring?
No, I think history is amazing, mostly because I believe that we are living through history right now. And I think a lot of people think that history is something that happened a long time ago, but it's not. It's something that's going on. We're making history currently right now as we sit here. It's one of the most fascinating things in the world.
It's boring when it is a lie, but when you really try to find what is behind, there are very interesting things. Mm-hmm. Okay, I don't claim that I have all the truth. I'm just showing a different side, a different way, just planting in your minds the seed of, what is this? What is this? Now, so Castro went he was 21 years old. He was a gangster of the University of Havana, killing people. And then, in 1953, President Batista, or Batista, former president and military, gave a coup d'etat, and Castro tried to overthrow him by force, attacking the Moncada garrison in Santiago de Cuba, in the eastern part of Cuba, and Castro was captured. And in the trial, he took on his own defense, and he ended his defense speech with the phrase, "Condemn me, never mind, history will absolve me."
Ooh, okay.
Well, it's interesting because in 1928, Adolf Hitler, tried to get power in Germany through a coup d'etat. He was detained, and in his trial, he assumed his own defense, and he ended his defense speech with the words, "Condemn me, never mind, the goddess of history will absolve me."
Wow.
Excuse me, don't trust my words.
Right.
Go to Google and search and say, Fidel Castro, Adolf Hitler, history will absolve me. Bang, you're going to get it.
Wow.
Okay? Mm-hmm. And this is the guy that has been sold to us as a Marxist, as a communist. Well, very strange type of communist. Well, and then he was sent to jail for 10 years. But surprisingly, just a little, and he was living the good life in jail, air conditioner, TV, all day.
Oh, right.
yeah, the good life. And then, having cigars. And then, just a little year after, Batista said, well, no, he can go out. And then, whoosh, out. Surprisingly. Then, Castro, went to Mexico and began, creating a guerrilla force who come back to Cuba and overthrew Batista. Finally, he arrived with a few people, went to the mountains, and began guerrilla warfare against Batista.
Okay.
Well. Surprise. If you read Ambassador Smith, L.T. Smith, his book, The Fourth Floor, according to Smith, the CIA guys in the embassy were all pro-Castro.
Okay.
Okay, the American consul in Santiago de Cuba, he was also a CIA officer, was giving money to Castro and bringing weapons from the Guantanamo base to the guerrillas there.
Okay, wow.
Okay, then so President Batista was losing the war. In his biography of Castro, that Salk published, I knew before, that the CIA was giving money to Castro.
Wow.
And the way that Castro was winning the battles against Batista's army was buying the officers and giving them a plane to fly to Miami. Okay,
wow.
That's the battles won by Che Guevara. And then, well, that is how things in Castro. Well, then, in Castro took power in January 1959, but in December 1958, Batista left the country. And but a few weeks before, President Eisenhower sent one of his friends, that was also a friend of Batista, a guy who has worked for the OSS, and then to tell Batista to leave the country. Batista say no, and then finally he left the country, and Castro got power in Cuba.
Wow.
Now, at the time, and this is very important, people don't like this, there was suddenly a clear and present danger threatening the U.S. government. Well, let me explain my terminology. When I say the U.S. government, I don't have in mind this bunch of monkeys in Washington, D.C. Okay? I'm talking about the true invisible power, invisible government of the United States.
Uh-huh.
That is in Manhattan, the Harold Pratt House, headquarters of the Council on Foreign Relations, and this invisible government is formed by all magnates, Wall Street bankers, and CEOs of transnational corporations.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, when I talk the U.S. government, that's the government I have in mind.
Okay.
The one that never changes. The puppets in Washington are changed, but the invisible government is the same, remains the same. By the way, there is a, have you heard about this in case of a nuclear attack, that there is a plan for continuity of, what?
Well, it's continuance of government. It has
of
nothing,
government.
It's not continuance of your well-being. They don't care about your well-being.
And it's not continuity of administration.
Yes, exactly.
Administration is a psychologically charged disinformational war. Mm-hmm. I never use the word. There's no such thing. The Obama administration is the seamless continuation of the Bush administration.
Yeah.
The Bush administration was the seamless continuation of the Clinton administration. The Clinton administration was the same, well, we can go back to Herbert Hoover.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay? Mm-hmm.
To Wilson. Okay?
Yep, absolutely.
To Wilson, with a few exceptions that I would say probably were JFK and Reagan.
Clearly, yeah. Well, Reagan's debatable, but clearly JFK for sure.
No, I think they were unwitting tools.
Okay. Fair enough. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, unwitting tools. Okay, and then and then there was a threat. What was the threat? Nuclear missile? No, worse than that. That Nikita Khrushchev had become the prime minister of the Soviet Union, and he had a new idea. He said, well, you know, this Cold War is not good.
Mm-hmm.
This is a nuclear war will be the end of the planet. Okay. No. We need to continue this, but in a peaceful level, you know, we need to compete. You know, communism is better than capitalism, of course, but we need to compete not in the military field, but in the cultural, economic field.
Right, the hearts and the minds of the people.
Yeah, and he called his doctrine peaceful coexistence.
Okay.
Okay? Wow, what a threat. He was going to end the Cold War. Okay,
right.
So everybody was scared here. You know, the Wall Street bankers, the corporations.
Wait, we're talking about $100 million war, or $100 billion war industry at the time when the war before that had only cost like $8 billion. So the amount of money that was being generated by these people is staggering.
Dangerous guy, this Nikita Khrushchev.
Mm-hmm.
Then what are we going to do? And they discovered, they remember that they had a guy in Cuba that was in prison.
Uh-huh.
And they told Batista, no, let him get out, go to get, and then they put him in power.
Right.
As soon as he was in power in Cuba, he began trying to get into the Soviet camp. But the Soviets were not buying.
Hmm.
They say, well, this guy, he's a lawyer. He's the son of a rich landlord.
That's
educated
right.
By the Jesuits in the better school.
Do you think they suspected him at that time of being a CIA mole?
Yeah.
Fully? Okay.
Actually, I discovered that Sergei Khrushchev, that is a Khrushchev's son, he mentioned in a speech that he gave in a university here in the, he has lived in the United States. He's an American citizen. I lived in the United States for probably 30 years. And he mentioned that when he was a teenager, he was in the Kremlin. And his father and some of the Politburo people were talking. That was 1959. And they were talking and they mentioned that they didn't trust Castro, that they suspected that Castro was an American agent.
Wow.
So I'm not saying that. That is...
That's Khrushchev saying that, yeah.
Son. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they were right, and they were not buying. Then what happened? The Bay of Pigs.
That's right.
The Bay of Pigs. And then, Castro won, and the Soviets say, by the way, I met a Soviet professor at Stanford University, and he told me that at the time when the Bay of Pigs invasion began, even the newspapers and media in the Soviet Union were preparing the people for the end of Castro. But suddenly, surprise, he won.
Right. Wow.
So my theory, the Bay of Pigs was a total success. A total success. Let me tell you why.
Yeah.
Before the Bay of Pigs, there were more than 15 anti-Castro organizations in Florida planning the invasion of Cuba towards mm-hmm. Castro. Mm-hmm. There was a strong anti-Castro underground movement in the big cities. And there was guerrilla anti-Castro guerrilla warfare in the Escambray Mountains in the central part of Cuba. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now, comes the invasion. The Cuban underground was left in the dark. A few weeks before the invasion, the CIA stopped helping the guerrillas in the Escambray. No more food, no more ammo, no more guns.
Okay.
And then, as you know, the invasion itself, initially the invasion was going to be in the city of, near the city of Trinidad, close to the Escambray Mountains. So if something happened, something failed, the invaders can go easily to the mountains.
Right.
But several members of the CIA convinced Kennedy not to do that, to change the point of invasion. By the way, it's not by chance that all of these CIA guys, including Ambassador Stevenson, was not CIA, but was important advisor. All of these people who advised Kennedy to change the point of the invasion were from an organization. What? New York Yankees?
No.
Council of Foreign Relations.
Right. Coincidentally enough, huh?
Yeah, just by chance. Now, the Bay of Pigs is a mousetrap. Okay. It's a small beach surrounded by a swamp.
Definition of a quagmire before we even get there, essentially.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So everything was a plan. Then Castro won. So Castro, in just one stroke, he destroyed the groups in Miami with the invasion, destroyed the underground anti-Castro organization, and destroyed the guerrillas in the Escambray. Full victory for Castro and his CIA masters.
Wow.
And then the Soviets say, well, he's the real guy. And open the doors for Castro.
Wow, so, okay.
Now what agent provocateur Fidel Castro, Alex, working for the CIA and his CFR master immediately began doing? Heating up the Cold War.
Which is exactly what his CIA handlers wanted. Right, okay.
He began infiltrating all the Third World movements and said, wait, I'm a communist, but I don't follow the Soviets. I think the Soviets are wrong. We need to guerrilla warfare. We need to fight the American imperialism with the same tools, with weapons. We need nuclear warheads. We need missiles. We need, and that's what he did. So he heated up the Cold War. Now a few years ago. There are several theories about if Castro fell into the Soviets' hands by his own will, or he was pushed to it with American actions about Castro.
Okay.
Well, he was pushed, but not by American action. He was pushed by a plan. There is something that was discovered by chance, because I told you that I'm not a historian, I'm an intelligence analyst. Historians believe only in documents. Now, let me ask you a question. Do you think that one day we're going to find a document, a signed document, ordering the assassination of President Kennedy?
I don't think we'll find a document. I got to say, though, I am very much looking forward to 2028, though, when all of that information is supposed to come out, because that is a subject that's near and dear to my heart.
It's not going to appear. These things are never written on paper. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, but just by chance, there is a document that appeared. And this is that in 1950, mid-1959, just a few months after Castle took power, Alan Dulles, CIA director,
correct,
just by chance, he passed by the British Embassy in Washington, D.C., and, oh, let me see, I'm going to talk to the ambassador.
Okay.
Said, hello. Oh, we have a nice day today with, have a cup of coffee. Oh, I think so, a cup of tea. By the way, do you know, this is a, by the way, Dulles talking to the ambassador.
Right.
By the way, do you know that Castro is trying to buy some Sea Fury plane? The Sea Fury was a steel propeller planes that Castro was trying to buy in the UK, and But don't sell the planes to Castro.
Ooh.
So he would be forced to go to the Soviets to buy them.
Wow.
Okay.
Okay.
But by mistake, the Soviet, KGB, the British ambassador, wrote a memo, the bureaucrat, to his office in London telling about the meeting.
Ooh. Oopsie.
What a strange Alan Dulles came here and they told me.
Right.
So he was pushed, but by a plan.
Wow.
Pushing into that. So against Castro went there, guerrilla warfare in Latin America, terrorism in Europe. So he made a big effort to, hit the Cold War to turn into a real, war. And then he was very, very successful.
Wow.
Then it came the Cuban Missile Crisis, and my theory in the Cuban Missile Crisis is that Nikita Khrushchev, at some time, he realized that Castro was not what he claimed to be, and he said, well, I need to get rid of this crazy guy. Okay, that's creating trouble.
Right.
It's creating trouble. He's going against my new policy of peaceful coexistence doctrine. Mm-hmm. And then say, well, I need to get rid of him. But how? I can do that overtly. Well, actually he tried.
Did he?
He tried with the Soviet ambassador. But how can I do? Well, let's see. I'm going to trick the Americans to do the dirty work for me. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And then he placed these things in Cuba, whatever they were. Of course, they were not nuclear missiles, not nuclear warheads, because he wanted the Americans to invade Cuba and get rid of Castro.
Wow.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
Now, what would have happened if the Americans had invaded Cuba? Well, they invade Cuba because there are nuclear warhead capital missiles in Cuba, then they invade Cuba, and like in Iraq, where
exactly
are the missiles?
Mm-hmm.
And then Nikita Khrushchev would have gone to the United Nations to denounce American imperialism.
Right.
Okay. They go to Nikita Khrushchev, denouncing American imperialism, but Castro gone.
Okay.
That was the plan. That was the plan. And it's a theory, but it's a well-documented theory that explains a lot of things that the other theories cannot explain.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Uh-huh.
And this is now my book, Psychological Warfare, there is a two books, Psychological Warfare and the New World Order, and also Partners in Treason, the CFR CIA Castro connection.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That is it. This is a video. And then, another book that I published in 2013, I Dare Call It Treason. I Dare Call It Treason is a smaller book, less page, but it's like a follow up for the Psychological Warfare and the New Order, where I describe how the Council on Foreign Relations has penetrated the American administration. I began since the World War II, and how the Council of Foreign Relations is the true invisible government of the United States. And that's it. The rest is smoke and mirrors. There are not two parties. Do you remember this film? What's the film? Title of the film. The guy who claims that this I'm
a two-party film? I can't think of it.
No. I say I'm mad as hell. I'm not gonna take it anymore.
Network.
Network.
Yeah.
There is a scene where this guy tell the guy, no, you know, there are no nation. There are only corporations.
That's
here.
Right.
There's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is smoke and mirror. There are no parties. The two part I call the Hippocratic Party. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, I'm not a seer. I don't have a crystal ball, but I have an uncanny ability to predict the future.
Okay.
Why? When I say this is going to happen and then happens, that means that I have a theory that explains what is going on.
Right.
Okay. And then, I have a theory. The next president will be selected. by the way, that the fact that Obama was not elected, but selected, the one who say that was Louis Farrakhan. Louis Farrakhan say Obama was not elected, he was selected.
Right.
And all presidents are selected, and then comes, after they are selected, comes all this propaganda action to make people believe that they have elected the puppet.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my point is that there are two big, well, now there are three. There are two big problems, stepping stones in the way of the new world order. One is in the United States, in America. One is the internet.
Right. Okay?
A totalitarian system of government, like the New World Order, cannot stand freedom of expression.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the second are guns in the hands of American citizens. A totalitarian form of government cannot stand armed citizens. Okay. So, two things. One is to get rid of the internet, and then one is taking the guns from the hands of the citizens. Now, getting rid of the internet cannot be done by a Republican. It has to be done by a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
Obama did already.
Yeah. He passed a new executive order last night outlining a whole bunch of new cybersecurity stuff.
So that my point is that the next president will be a Republican because he's the one who would take the guns from the hands of the citizens, and Republicans will willingly, happily, with submit their guns to the Republican.
Oh my God! I can't even imagine a world in America where that could happen. I just really
No, you can't, because it's not be American anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's
but there is something that they didn't expect. That is this: the third problem is the new Russia.
Right.
Russia. The Russians finally discover that the revolution was made in America, that Lenin was a sent from Zurich with gold from bankers, that Trotsky, who was living in New York, was paid his trip with money also to Russia.
Wow.
And the idea was to get rid of the SARS in Russia because Russia had discovered oil.
That's right.
It was becoming number two oil producer in the world, and the Rockefellers hate competition.
That's
you know
right. Servando, I got to cut you off, brother. We are out of time for the day. I would love to have you come back and talk about Russia and the predictions for the future, especially with things that are going on in Cuba. Thank you so much for spending this time with us today, sir.
Okay, same to you.
Absolutely. Well, man, I hope you guys enjoyed that, ladies and gentlemen. Servando Gonzalez, please do a search for him, servandogonzalez.org, or find the link on redpillreports.com. Support his books. These are fantastic books, ladies and gentlemen. Tomorrow, Xavier Hayes will be with us in the second hour. Hope you guys have a wonderful rest of your day. Keep your head on a swivel, and do not let the man get you down.
Truth Frequency Radio is your number one source for news and information without the hate, hype, and fear. We are proud to bring you cutting-edge programs like The Kev Baker Show,
The Christopher Everard Show,
The Freedom Link with Joe Joseph,
Truth Frequency with Chris and Shuri Geo,
Red Pill Reports
with J.D. Moore,
X-Squared with Brooks Agnew,
Down the Rabbit Hole with Popeye,
Freaky Friday
with The Woo Crew,
Waking Up the Masses
with Robert Bruce,
Phoenix Rising Radio,
and dozens more.
Did you know you can listen from any computer, mobile device, or from any telephone by dialing 832-225-5308.
Or call into your favorite show toll-free at 866-37-TRUE.
Uncensored talk and news you won't hear in the mainstream media.
24 hours a day.
Truth Frequency Radio. Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.